Welcome to episode 74 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. In December 2006, I visited Hokkaido to photograph the Red Crown Cranes. 3.5 weeks ago, we started a series of travelogue-style episodes in which you can join me on my photographic adventures and share my experiences while viewing some of the shots in iTunes or on my website. We pick up the trail at the start of the fourth day, the final day, again looking through the shots from this day and also summarising what I ended up gaining from the trip compared to what I was hoping to gain. Before we go on to the main topic for today, note that this is the final week that the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is being sponsored by top camera bag manufacturers Lowepro. Over 40 years of firsts in camera bags. If you didn't yet hear my review of the bags that I use and details of the Stealth Reporter D650 AW camera bag that you can win in the photography assignment, please listen to episode 70 of this podcast. There's still plenty of time to scoop this amazing prize, and I'd just like to say thanks again to Lowepro for your support and generosity. Well, I'm just back from the UK after almost 2.5 weeks with my family. Been there for a wedding. My niece got married on the 3rd a couple of days ago. And so I'd actually released the last two episodes that I'd prepared before I went, the week before I flew over to the UK. So they've been coming out kind of remotely. And a good night's sleep last night, just about. I don't think I'm going to have jet lag. We managed to stay awake for the whole day after getting back. So it's late in the afternoon on the 7th, and I'm actually recording this. Normally, I don't record in the afternoon, but there was probably going to be... The reason I'm telling you this is there's probably going to be a few screams and shouts. There's a school near here, and there's probably going to be a few noises that creep in as I'm recording, but I want to get this recorded and out as soon as possible, so forgive me for that if you do hear anything. So, if you remember from the first few episodes of this travelogue, on this trip, I was hoping to get three types of shots. Having gotten a few nice panning shots of the birds flying almost in the dark, with the movement of their wings recorded on the film over... that was the first few evenings I got those. I was relatively happy that I'd got some decent shots from of that first type. The second two types of shots, though, depended on weather conditions, and it's just really, with just 4 days here, it was always going to be a little bit hit and miss. I got up at 5 a.m. on this final day to get out to the Ottawa Bridge, which you might recall directly translates as the Sound of Wings Bridge, and I was still hoping for a chance to get some of the second type of shot I was after, which is the cranes from this bridge, enshrouded in the mist around dawn as the birds, start their day. It was very cold on this final morning, but it was not quite as cold as it needs to be for the river to get misty as I'd hoped. For this, the mist, you need a temperature as low as minus 15 degrees Celsius or 5 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't remember exactly, but I think it was around minus 8 to 10 degrees Celsius as I approached the bridge, still clinging to some threads of hope. As I set up my tripod with the 600mm f4 lens and peered down onto the river where the cranes roost on cold nights, trying to make out the scene in the pre-dawn dark, I could see lots and lots of cranes, so it had obviously been cold. But unfortunately, there was no mist. So there went the chance of getting the second type of the three shots that I was hoping to. As there were a lot of cranes, though, I decided to hang around on this last day, as I was hoping now to get some shots of the birds as they left this location, as they flew from here. They'd go in front of me across the bridge to the Ito Crane Sanctuary, where I'd been spending most of the last 3 days here. This was kind of a gamble, as I was quite possibly throwing away my chance to get the third type of shot, which was one with a pair of cranes honking in the warm sunlight with the mist bellowing out of their beaks. You know, by warm, I mean warm coloured sunlight, not warm, because obviously if it was warm, then the breath is not going to freeze as it comes out of their beaks. I have some shots with the freezing breath visible from previous trips, but I really want one with the warm early morning sunlight as a backdrop. I could possibly have still gotten this shot had I gone to the sanctuary now and waited for sunup, but there was no guarantees that the sky would turn orange as the sun rose, so I decided to stay here at the river and try to capture the cranes in a different environment to that of the sanctuary. Let's take a look at the first shot today, which is number 1246, where we can see a fairly large number of cranes still wandering around in the river as they start their day, and what are actually four hooper swans that have just taken off from the river in the stretch of water between the back and the front islands to the left. I found it quite interesting that these large birds all roost together without any territorial squabbles, though I'm sure they sort of have a niggle at each other every now and again when they get too close, but right there in the same part of the river. This was shot at 7:36 a.m., around 45 minutes after the sun hits the horizon. The low cloud and the mountains stopped this area from receiving any direct sunlight at this point, but the sky was actually turning quite nice orange now, which was reflecting in the water of the river. This was probably enhanced somewhat by the boost in saturation that I give my shots to get that velvia slide film look that I like, but this is pretty much how I remember the scene anyway. I have cropped this image along the top and the bottom to remove unnecessary areas that really added nothing to the scene. If you look at the EXIF data below on my online gallery at martinbaileyphotography.com, you'll see that I was shooting at 840mm, which is the 600mm f4 lens with a 1.4 extender, which is what Canon calls a teleconverter. I had stopped down a little to f11 to get the background scene more in focus, but you can see that as I'm focusing on the flying swans here, even the cranes below at the front are slightly out of the depth of field, and the ones at the back of the scene are quite out of focus. There is enough detail in the scene, though, to be able to see what's happening, and also allow us to focus on the swans as they are sharp, and that really removes any doubt as to what the main subject of the image is. The f11 aperture, by the way, meant that I had to raise the ISO to ISO 400 to be able to get the shutter speed of 1/160th of a second. Because I was in manual mode, you can't see the amount of exposure compensation I was using, but as I recall, I was exposing around 1 to 1/3 of a stop under what the camera's meter was thinking here, as it was still, you know, not that bright a scene, and I didn't want to falsely brighten it up at all. I would probably have gone as low as -2 stops for this kind of light had the river not been reflecting quite a lot of light back, which was kicking the exposure back the other way, cancelling out some of the metering system's shortcomings. Note that I use centre-weighted metering most of the time, though, as opposed to evaluative metering. So I'm working more with direct light readings than the more intelligent matrix readings and algorithms that the camera would do if I left it totally up to the camera itself. So this might not translate exactly to what your own shooting style demands. Really, the best thing to do to get your own exposure right in the field is to just keep on checking your histogram, if you use a digital SLR, that is, to make sure that you're where you think you need to be for any particular scene. For a scene like this, you'd expect to see a large hump over on the left third, or maybe a quarter, for the dark area of the trees in the background and the sides of the frame, but then another hump in the right quarter or so for the lighter water. With digital, I generally tend to expose for the highlights, ensuring that nothing is blowing out, and therefore ensuring that the right side of your histogram doesn't hit the right shoulder is usually a good guide. In the next shot, number 1249, we can see a close-up of a red-crowned crane as it approached the bridge, flying away from the river. This was singled out from a group of five or six cranes that had just taken off, which I chose to do rather than shooting with the 100 to 400 millimeter lens on my 5D to get in the whole group in. I did shoot some shots like that, but for now I want to look at this particular image. You'll notice that I was still at f11, this time with a shutter speed of 1/125th of a second, and I dropped the ISO to 200 as it got lighter. This cost me a little shutter speed, but as I wanted to get some movement in the bird's wings as well, it wasn't really that important. But I can't pretend, though, that I was changing these settings for each individual shot. There's simply not enough time to change the settings for longer shots to the those necessary for close-ups as the birds come towards you. One thing I did try for a while was keeping the manual settings at f11 and then the aperture priority settings at f5.6 or something around there, and then switching from manual to aperture, as this is an easy way to switch around. But I found this to be a little troublesome and confusing, and I don't recall if this really helped any more than it slowed me down. I'll continue to develop this style, I think, because just switching the from manual to aperture priority is very quick. I don't like it because aperture priority, again, the reason that I use manual is because as the birds move from a dark background to a light background, you can blow out the whites of the birds very easily because you're relying on the camera's meter. So I really don't think that it suits this type of shooting. But I think I'll still try this a little bit more and see if it's a possible way to have two totally different bunches of settings on the camera. The other way to do this, of course, is by simply making a few clicks one way to change the aperture and a few more clicks the other way to change the shutter speed. But of course, because I'm making these in manual mode, when you're talking just a second or so from when multiple birds are filling the frame to having to focus on a single bird coming towards you pretty fast, it can all just get pretty confusing and cost you the shot. The other thing I am doing, of course, is shooting with a second camera set up differently with a 100 to 400 millimeter lens so that I can zoom in and out more efficiently and have a different depth of field at the ready. On the artistic side, I have kept this image quite dark, again, as there are really, there's not a lot of available light around yet, but also to enhance the highlights that we can now see hitting the bird from the back. The back left there, where the sun was now breaking through the clouds. This sunlight was not hitting the river below yet, but it was now high enough in the sky to clear the mountains and break through the cloud, hitting objects around the height of the bridge on which I was standing. These highlights are what make the shot for me, on the body and the tail, plus the neck and the side of the face there of the bird, but also the tips of the wings. With a little movement registering, we can see the soft morning light slightly illuminating the tips of the crane's wings against the very dark background. In image number 1253, we can see another mass exodus as more than 30 cranes take to the sky from the river. There are, I think, around 28 birds in the main group, 4 more in a subgroup below the main group, 1 taking off alone from the furthest island on the left as we look at the shot, and another 2 cranes flying way in the background at the top right there. I chose this from a number of images shot in succession as the birds flew towards me, mainly because the left and rightmost cranes were nicely spaced from the edges of the frame without any cropping. I liked the 2 birds in the top right as well, adding more interest, which will be much more apparent in a large print though, and I don't think that you'll be able to see it very well in the web version, and if you're looking on an iPod you might as well forget it. But also I like the pair of birds walking in the river to the left as well. I often see these cranes just walking around in pairs, and again I'm personifying them somewhat here, but it always seems as though they're just sort of having a breakfast time stroll, reflecting on life in what seems to be, although extremely harsh conditions, something of a utopia for these magnificent birds. There are 2 more pairs in the middle of the frame as well that seem to be just wandering around, which for me just adds a little more interest to the overall story that unfolds the more I look at this image. I'm trying now to get an ISO of 100 for minimum grain. I'd opened the aperture up to f8 with a shutter speed of 1/250th of a second when I shot this. Again, to a certain extent, being governed more by the changing light than the need for more or less depth of field. But as the entire scene was so far away, even when shooting this at 600mm, having removed the 1.4 times extended for a while, I think that there was enough depth of field at f8 to pull this off. We can see now that the sun, having been up for an hour and 20 minutes, that the sun's rays were now catching the wings of the cranes, even at this part of the river, and the surface of the water was much brighter now and still taking on a quite yellow cast, partly due to the warm morning sun and partly down to the saturation settings used in post-processing. It was shortly after this that I had to head back to the Hotel Taito for breakfast and say goodbye to this location for this particular trip. There are more images from this few hours pre-breakfast shoot on my website, along with all the others from this trip. Again, I'll put a link to display all of the images from the trip in the show notes. But let's continue looking at the rest of the day's shots that I'd started after breakfast with image number 1255. In this photo, you can see that I had basically lost my chance to get the third kind of photo that I'd been hoping for, which is the cranes with their breath freezing against the warm morning sun as a background. It was just too warm as the sun came up on this final day too. This is a nicest shot with the cranes honking, one of them with the wind ruffling up its tail feathers and the other one behind honking too, kind of like a backup. The tree to the right in the background is in focus enough to add a little interest, but not so much that it overpowers the main subjects, which are of course the cranes. I like this shot mainly because of the detail in the tail of the crane on the right. Plus there are no other birds cluttering up the shot, and there's a nice catchlight in both birds' eyes too. One other thing to note here is that many of the birds at the sanctuary actually have ID rings, ID tags on their legs. So it's always nice, as with this shot, to capture some cranes that don't have them. I shot this at f8 for 1/400th of a second at ISO 100 with my 600mm f4 lens. In image number 1259, we can see another pair of cranes, this time one with tagged legs, unfortunately. For this shot, I really just like the slightly comical way the crane to the right is looking very nonchalantly at the bird on the left, who is obviously trying its best to impress with a wonderful dance and song. The catchlight in the bird to the left's eye is nice too. Shot at f8 for 1/500th of a second, again at ISO 100 with the 600mm f4 lens. Not a particularly great shot. I thought I'd include it today really to just touch on cropping images. It always feels good to nail a shot in such a way that it requires no cropping, but I feel that cropping should also be used to enhance a shot. It is part of the composition, really, sometimes visualized when shooting, such as to remove the top and the bottom or both from a shot that will obviously look better in letterbox-style panorama, but it can also be an afterthought. Either way, I don't particularly feel that cropping a shot is in any way cheating, as some people seem to believe. Even if it's being done to remove something that detracts from the main subject. I would definitely prefer to crop an image than to clone out something, which I'm not myself all that comfortable with. In the original of the image that we're actually looking at right now, it was obvious that I'd need to crop when I shot it. There was a single crane on the left and the tail of another crane encroaching into the scene from the right. After cropping them out, I'm left with a perfectly square, balanced image. Of course, I could have changed to a vertical composition, but as I was using a prime lens, not a zoom, I would have just basically ended up with more foreground and sky that really wouldn't have added anything to the shot at all. So, I just cropped out 20% to the left and then around 10% to the right and made it into a relatively nicely balanced shot. On occasion, I'll also crop out portions of a larger photo when I could simply just not get physically closer, or did not have a long enough lens to make up for, not being able to get closer either. Of course, you need to be careful not to cut away too much of a shot and leave yourself a tiny image, especially if you want to make large prints. But the amount you can remove from leaving, the image usable and useful really depends on your intended use and how many pixels you had to start with. And with all that in mind, it's still very much open to debate as to what you need, and I'm not about to start preaching on this in any way. Of course, it's up to the individual to decide how everyone feels about this and the amount of cropping that you personally can do, if at all. One last thing that I should say is that cropping just out of laziness and not taking the time to get it right in the field is something that I would not do. If you can get closer or use a different lens, then do so. It's always best to get the image as good as possible in the field over any amount of post-processing. My point is that as photographers, our main job is really deciding what to leave out of the frame. Sometimes that can be equally, if not more important than the decision as to what to include in the image. So cropping should not be avoided just for the sake of keeping the original aspect ratio. Trying to do so may unnecessarily limit your creativity. By lunchtime, the sky had really started to clear up, much more than any of the previous 3 days, which opened up a whole new window of opportunity for me photographically. I could now experiment a little more with the cranes against a blue sky, which often looks so much better than when they're set against a plain white or grey sky, just because there's so much more contrast. In image number 1262, I noticed a bunch of pigeons that had taken off at the same time from the field at the sanctuary, and there was the same number of pigeons as there was cranes as they flew out of the sanctuary to the left. We can count exactly the same number of pigeons, 4 pigeons and 4 cranes, with a nice blue sky with a few sort of wispy clouds as a backdrop. It would have been nice if the two different breeds of birds had flown out in line, or at least a little more symmetrically arranged in some way, but I still think that being able to play off the number coincidence is better than a straight shot in some ways. You'll see here that I have cropped the top and the bottom of this shot to allow us to home in on the 8 birds more easily. This was shot at with the 100 to 400 millimeter lens on the 5D at f/8 for 1/640th of a second at ISO 100. In image number 1274, we can see that another element, a benefit of the sky clearing, had appeared to add interest. The moon was rising quickly and was now helping to add that extra element to my shots, as the timing of the birds fell into place as they flew in front of it. By now it was 12:30 p.m. and I was into my last hour and a half of shooting before I had to leave for the airport to fly back to Tokyo. The moon and the blue sky had me running around frantically, really quite charged up as things unfolded. As I wanted to get some detail in the moon, I closed the aperture down to f/11 and raised the ISO to 200 to compensate, giving me a shutter speed of 1/500th of a second. Not a brilliant shot again, but the tops of the trees along with the moon add a little something more to the shot than just the cranes against the blue sky. The next shot, number 1286, is one of my favourites from this final day, and possibly from the trip. This too is going to be a little bit difficult to appreciate on an iPod, and possibly difficult on the web size too, but it's really going to be a very, very nice large print. I recall tracking the birds as they circled in the distance, having flown out of the sanctuary, and was tilting the camera and positioned the moon in the bottom right-hand corner of the frame, and got the cranes there. As I rotated the composition, I got the cranes there in the top left-hand corner. I don't recall cropping this at all, so really the in-camera composition is what you see here, which I personally think really works as a large fine art print, with just the moon and the 3 cranes against a very uniformly coloured dark blue sky. This will probably work as a black and white print too, but I haven't given that a try yet. For this, I'd actually close the aperture down a little further to f/16 and raise the ISO to 400 again to compensate, so that I could keep the shutter speed at 1/500th of a second. I was using the 100 to 400 millimeter lens on the 5D, by the way, and the fact that I was at the widest focal length of 100 millimeters with this lens really pushed my composition as I tracked around with the birds and the moon there, and I think I pulled it off okay. Another shot at 100 millimeters with the 5D is the last shot of the cranes that we'll look at today, and that's image number 1291. For this shot, I'd actually initially taken my mind off the moon for a while, as it was now quite high in the sky, and I thought I'd got a few successful shots anyway. So I dropped the ISO to 100 again and was shooting at f6 for 1/640th of a second. It was kind of just luck that this pair of cranes flew straight out of the sanctuary overhead and headed towards the moon, allowing me to get them in the frame with the moon together. You'll notice that the moon is not really, it's just a little soft, from the narrower depth of field, but when viewed at this size, it's not that noticeably soft. You can see it more when you view it full size, but at this size it's really not that bad. But the cranes are incredibly sharp, so I'm still thinking that it's a nice addition to the gallery. I wanted to briefly touch on the importance of keeping an eye out behind you when shooting at this kind of location. The birds often fly in from behind you, and they'll often circle around after taking off, allowing to get some great shots like this that would simply not be possible if you just look straight ahead. Waiting for the action in front of you is probably not, it's going to cut your chances down by at least half. So, of course, if you spend all of your time looking around, then you'll often miss that action in front of you too. So I find that a glimpse over the shoulder every minute or so can help increase your chances. You won't catch them all, but it does help. The other thing that I find useful too is keeping your ears open as well as your eyes, just waiting for the shutter sound as people click away on their cameras behind you. Or, people that were looking behind them, they may be next to you, but people that are looking around when you're not, if they start to click, then you can use that as a good hint that there's something else in the world that you're not pointing your camera at. This gives very little warning, though, as they'll be already shooting. But if you can get your second camera in your hand or hanging around your neck, get it in shooting position really quickly. I've been putting mine, I think I mentioned last week or the week before, that I've been putting mine in the stone bag of the Jitso tripod. That's like a little piece of cloth that hangs between the legs. I've been putting my 5D with the 100 to 400 millimeter lens in there, and just you can really get it just picked up in a second, and it just helps to get some great shots, even if you do wait until you hear other photographers clicking away. I've not included any shots of the cranes almost overhead in this podcast, as it would make it a little too long. But there are some on my website if you're interested, and again I'll be putting a link into the show notes. If you check the EXIF data below this last photo that we're looking at on my website, you'll see that it's already 2:10 p.m. and that's 10 minutes after the time that I'd planned to leave for the airport. I was finding it really difficult to drag myself away from the sanctuary with all the action going on overhead. But I really was starting to cut it fine now. I had to pack my camera away, and I said my goodbye to Mr. Watanabe, who I'd met here 3 days earlier and spent a lot of time chatting to during my stay. And I also said goodbye to a guy that I met. I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce his first name or his second name correctly. Cesare Raxcourt, that's Cezary Raczko. This is a guy that I met here a couple of times over the last few days. Forgive me if I've totally messed up the pronunciation of your name if you're listening, but basically Cesare is a US-based photographer, part-time, semi-pro photographer. I checked out his website when I got home, and there's really he's creating some really great stuff. So I'll put a link to his website in the show notes. So please check it out if you have some time. Anyway, as I walked away from the sanctuary, I couldn't resist raising my camera to shoot this last shot for today, and indeed for this this travelogue, the series, and that is number 1294. I noticed these five cranes coming in to land as I walked along the road, and I happened to be positioned so that they fell right in to the, you know, the two guys. They formed a line above two guys. One of them is Watanabe-san. I don't know who the other one is. And that's Cesare or Cesare's camera there, towering above the guy on the left. And Watanabe-san is there in the navy-coloured coat, snapping away. He was going to be here for one more day, for which I must admit I was really envious. I was also envious of the people that I'd met at the hotel that were here on Christmas Day in 2006, a few days before I'd arrived, because it had been extremely cold and the mist on the river had been magnificent. Exactly what I'd hoped to capture, but it wasn't to be. It was also not to be for me to get the other shot with the freezing breath against the warm sunlight, as I said earlier. So I'd gotten a few nice panning shots and a number of other great shots, so I was in no way disappointed with my quarry. Wildlife photography is like any other kind of photography that depends on special weather conditions or timing of natural events, takes a lot of time and patience. I would have been ecstatic to have captured all three types of shots during my 4 days here, well, actually 3.5 days here in Hokkaido in December 2006. But this is really not long enough, and I was hoping for more luck than anything else. But this was my third winter trip to Hokkaido and will definitely not be my last. Hopefully next year I'll be able to find a little more time, at least a week, hopefully longer, to really concentrate on getting some spectacular shots here. And even if I manage to capture something that I'm really happy with, it won't be my last visit. I'll, you know, I intend to just keep coming back here as long as I can finance the travel, either through my day job or through photography. You know, and each time I come, I'll always come away with something a little better or a little different. Of course, people will always get lucky and maybe turn up once and get the exact conditions to maybe make a killing in one day. But, you know, generally, not giving up on nature photography is the only way to improve your portfolio. Of course, each year we continue to hone our skills as well, and as we improve as photographers, or at least we should. So this, coupled with Mother Nature's fickleness, pretty much make up the reasons that I'll keep coming back. As I've said in other podcasts, previous podcasts, resilience and determination are really very necessary elements to be able to succeed in getting the sort of images that I'm starting to be able to make now. And also, you know, some of the scenic work, the landscapes that I've done at certain times of the years, you just can't get them without like driving through the night, getting on a plane, to going and doing things that, you know, many people that are just sort of hobbyists, or even some people that really just don't want to go the extra mile to get the better shots, that, you know, they won't do that. So I really think that determination, investment in time, and obviously, when we're dealing with expensive equipment, money as well, is all necessary to sort of set yourself apart. So that's one of the reasons why I'm just going to continue at it. And hopefully, as you listen, I've had mail over the years, well, over the last year and a half or so since starting this podcast, where people are they're basically listening to the podcast and getting inspiration, and a fair few number of people have told me that listening has helped them to rekindle their interest in photography, and they're now back out again, and at the crack of dawn taking photos. So you know, it's something that we all need to do if we want to make a difference, if we want to make good shots. So that's it for this trip. I hope you've enjoyed it. Before we finish, just a couple of bits of housekeeping. Firstly, I wanted to mention that I was interviewed by Thomas Chebiatowski of the Shutter Stories podcast. Thomas has just launched a new website where you'll find our interview, plus three other interviews from other photographers, which make for a great read. So if you have some time, please take a look at www.shutterstoriesmagazine.com. Finally, remember that there's still some time to enter the silence assignment and put yourself in a position to win the Lowepro Stealth Reporter D650 AW camera bag that will be awarded to the entrant with the most votes after the assignment, after the current one. The votes added together from both, and indeed all these assignments to date. Take a look in the assignments forum at martinbaileyphotography.com for more details. But just to remind you, you'll be able to upload your images for the silence assignment until the end of Sunday the 18th, just over a week from now. A week from the date of the release of this podcast. But that will be pretty much anywhere in the world. I usually wait until my Monday afternoon or evening, so you should be able to upload until the end of your Sunday, no matter where you are. With this assignment, we'll have the winner. The winner will still receive a print of your choice from my online gallery, but the scores will go into a pool and be added to the scores for the following assignment that will be announced 2 weeks after the 18th. When the voting closes and the winner is known for the silence assignment. If you amass more votes from both, or even enough votes with a single assignment, which is not impossible in any way, you'll take the amazing Lowepro camera bag as your prize. So good luck with your last week's shooting for the silence assignment for now, and have a great week, whether you're shooting for the assignment or whatever you're doing. Bye bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.